To all who come to this happy podcast, welcome. I'm Jamie Beseda, senior editor at Travel Weekly and the co-host of the Trade Secrets podcast, introducing a new mini-series, Selling the Mouse. Over the course of 5 episodes, I'll chat with travel advisors about theme park news, the business of selling Disney and Universal, and more. Selling the Mouse will automatically appear in the Trade Secrets feed every time an episode is released. You can also find it at travelweekly.com/podcasts. Talk to you real soon. I'm Jamie Beseda.
And I'm Emma Weissman.
And this is Trade Secrets, a podcast from Travel Weekly and Travel Age West, where travel advisors ask questions and we answer them.
It's like Dear Abby, but just for travel agents and in podcast form.
Every other week, we'll invite an industry expert to join us in answering travel advisors' questions. This week, first up is mergers and acquisitions in the agency community, and then we'll answer a bunch of advisors' questions mailbag style.
We've got some great guests joining us today. We have Lindsay Epperly, the owner and CEO of Jet Set World Travel, and Emma Major, which I already said to her, but great name, Emma. Good to have another Emma on board today, founder of Jet Set affiliate Major Travel. And before we get into the episode, I would love if each of you could tell us a bit about yourselves and how you got into the industry. So Lindsay, let's start with you.
Yeah, thank you both for having us on. We're really excited today. How I got into the industry, I was 19 and I walked into a local travel agency for a brochure and I accidentally walked out with a job. So it was totally kismet. It found me.
That is awesome. You don't hear that very much, like those kind of like serendipitous moments where someone actually walks into a retail storefront agency. Right. And what was that like? Was it just, were you going in for information about a family trip? What was the context surrounding that?
That's exactly it. My mom sent me on an errand for a cruise brochure for a family cruise we were going on. I had just gotten back from studying abroad. So, you know, like any, like, 19-year-old college student who's just been to Europe. That's all you talk about. And I'm just happened to be talking to the owners of the agency about my experience. And they're like, you're really passionate about travel. You should consider selling it. And I was like, wait, people sell travel? And they're like, that's what we do here. You're standing
that is what we are. You have found yourself in the right place.
I see. So they opened my eyes and the ability. And I started by selling honeymoons on the weekend because I was still a college student. So I'd drive to bridal shows, set up a sandals booth usually, and plan honeymoons for people.
That's awesome. I love that. Well, we are happy to have you here. Emma, how about you tell us a little about yourself?
Yeah, growing up, my mom was a flight attendant for Delta and still is. So I was her little buddy going around the world on her free passes. And I was working in a marketing job and thought, there's so much more that I could be doing. So I took that marketing skill set and I joined the travel industry. I originally started with another industry or agency as an IC. And then I was with Lindsay in that same sphere. And so I jumped over to be with Lindsay a couple of years later. So I've been able to learn a lot from all of these older industry experts and it's been amazing. But yeah, my passion for travel got me into the industry to begin with.
Ah, two great origin stories. I love it.
Well, to kick off this episode, first, we want to talk about acquisitions in the agency community. And we do have an episode on selling travel agency businesses from a previous season of Trade Secrets. We invited Dr. Bob Jocelyn of Jocelyn Consulting Group to join us. Lindsay, I know you have a special connection to him. If you want to learn more about the nitty-gritty details of selling a business, please check out that episode. We will link it in the show notes. But Lindsay, I want to throw this to you first because this is something that you are intimately familiar with. Epperly Travel acquired Jet Set World Travel during the pandemic in the summer of 2021. Can you give us a general overview of that acquisition and why you did that?
Yeah, absolutely. And shout out to Dr. Bob Jocelyn, who is our fairy godfather, essentially, of this acquisition. So my husband and I are business partners, and we had been strategically talking about, we had just launched our new hosting program in October of 2020. And even hired a managing director then. So we were doing a lot of countercultural decisions when it came to the pandemic to begin with, because we knew that we could build what was Epperly at the time to be a very strong player coming out of the pandemic if we took the right next steps. So even in October of 2020, it was as early on as we started having conversations about we know we have something special on our hands. We know we have a vision for this program. And what are ways that we could achieve that vision, especially take advantage of opportunities that this time could allot us, one of which was the idea of acquiring. So that bug was planted. We were, as married business partners with, I believe, what was a 4 or 5 month old at the time, the idea of buying another business was, you know, I was like, no, we cannot even begin to think about that. So it's February of 2021 that we began speaking to Dr. Bob and saying, hey, any idea? And we actually specifically went to him and asked, any idea if you know if JetSet is for sale? Because we had identified if there was one company that we would love to work with, it would be them. They had such a very similar ethos to them. Julia Perung, their founder, is a fabulous mentor who has been several years ahead of me that I've always looked up to. And so it was like, well, if we could just dream big here, you know, that's who we would be interested in. And Dr. Bob made one phone call and everything just fell into place after that.
Wow. That's really something. So now I'm curious, you've got now the benefit, you're a bit out of the acquisition, a bit far out from the acquisition. How have things panned out? What benefits have you seen? Was there anything unexpected that happened?
We did the acquisition in 2021. And so then we were running the two brands parallel, Epperly Travel and JetSet World Travel. We felt like both of these are companies that are well-respected boutique agencies that have great reputations. And we really didn't want to do anything to rock the boat of either. And we wanted the advisors to trust us from JetSet. That was a huge thing too, as we knew we were taking a big risk buying a mostly independent contractor-based business. And so how do we go about making thoughtful decisions? So one of the things that we did this year was we actually rebranded from Epperly to JetSet. So, and we can certainly talk all about that because that was a whole learning experience in itself too. But in terms of the benefits, our vision for JetSet is to maintain a boutique culture where our team members, I mean, our support, our community is really our secret sauce. So it's so that our community can still stay integrated, so that ownership and leadership can still know everyone by name and know what their goals are. But to see the company size double because of this acquisition and to see what that did when it came to our relationships in terms of suppliers and interest in terms of media and really very much put us on the map. That was fascinating because I went from being a top producing solo advisor with a team at a larger company to then a very small agency owner when we brought Epperly Travel Independent. And people would not give me the time of day. Like, there were several suppliers at the time that were just like, all right, you're not really anyone anymore. And so The acquisition really actually helped us gain our footing when it came to respect and relationships in the industry.
I remember I actually wrote an article and I spoke with you, Lindsay, when this was all happening. And it was just so unusual to see two boutique agencies come together. Like, usually you see these mega agencies kind of gobbling up these smaller ones. But I want to go back to what you said about culture and community. And how did you balance combining two businesses, but maintaining the identity of them and the values? And what were the challenges that surrounded that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's something that we really wanted to be highly intentional about because we felt like both businesses had been built in such a thoughtful way. And that is why you're right. It was very unique for two boutiques to come together like that. When we sat down with Julia, it was just such a chemistry because her vision and her goals were so in line with our vision and our goals. And then the team members that have selected to be with JetSet, whether as part of the brand or an affiliate like Emma, they have that same kind of desire, right? So we knew we had a lot of stakeholders that we had to ensure we were serving well and that we were being very intentional about. And so it's just been one thoughtful step that is usually anywhere from 6 to 8 months ahead of itself, you know, in front of, like, nothing we're doing is reactionary anymore. So we're always trying to stay ahead of the game when it comes to, all right, if a rebrand is happening, what do we need to do to line up to ensure that everyone feels safe and stable and secure? And I will tell you one of the learning lessons from that too, in terms of keeping that culture, is ensuring that you have open communication. Even during the pandemic, when it was just a team of 10 at Epperly Travel, Jeremy, my husband, kind of adopted the mantra that silence breeds insecurity. And we really kept that mantra going through the acquisition and then through the rebrand, because we realized if we're not saying something, people are creating a story in their head and they're starting to get insecure and they're starting to think, well, this is what's actually going on behind the scenes. And I would even say we think we over communicate, and still we would run into situations where people are like, oh, we didn't know that, you didn't tell us. And so my advice out of maintaining that culture is all in the communication.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Definitely. Now, speaking of stakeholders and communication, Emma, you were with Lindsay pre and obviously post acquisition. What's your take on how everything went from your position as an affiliate?
It's funny. I think, you know, when things were going on, it rarely crossed my mind that we were going through an acquisition and that our affiliate partner was doing that. So I think Lindsay is right on the money with, you know, clear as kind is what she loves to say. And every step of the way, we were informed about any changes that would impact us. And I don't think there was one moment when I doubted that we were going to be well taken care of and that what was going to happen was going to protect us in the long run and was going to help us to grow as a team. And it was fascinating to watch that, having my own team of 7 advisors, because they were very new to industry when this, I think I had just brought them on when this acquisition was taking place. And they also needed that reassurance that who we were aligned with was a strong partner and that we weren't going to be seeing any, you know, impacts directly from that. And so taking what Lindsay and Jeremy were doing and also allowing that to trickle down to my team was really, really huge.
Clear as kind. I love that. And that kind of applies to all facets in life, right? Too, like, transparency is always a good thing. So that's great to hear. And, you know, we're going to take a quick break. But after that, we're going to share some listener questions. And this is kind of a unique episode. So we gather all of our questions at the beginning of the season. There are certain questions that might not fall into a themed episode. Listeners know that usually we do have a theme to these conversations. So we're going to kind of do it mailbag style and ask you to some of the questions that have just rolled in that might not fit into another theme. But first, before we do that, we'd like to thank our friends at Dream Vacations for helping us source some questions for this season.
Mm-hmm. Dream Vacations, a franchisor, fully funds exclusive offers on behalf of its franchise owners. Each year, Dream Vacations fully funds $4 million in exclusive promotions, national branding, and marketing programs to help its network of travel advisors grow their businesses. Learn more about Dream Vacations at www.dreamvacationsfranchise.com. And we will be back with some listener questions after the break.
The Humans of Travel podcast launched with a simple goal: to zero in on some of the most exceptional people in the travel industry, to hear their stories and get to the heart of who they are as people, the highs and the lows that make them human. My name is Emma Weissman. I'm the managing editor at Travel Age West and your host of Humans of Travel. Get ready to dive deep with travel industry executives, notable authorities, travel advisors, and more. Find us wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to be in the know for when we release new episodes. Looking forward to the conversation. Welcome back to Trade Secrets. We're here with Lindsay Epperly and Emma Major. So as I mentioned before the break, this is kind of where we're going to just throw some questions at you guys, ones that we've gotten from agencies that might not fit into a regular themed episode. So first, we have a question from Lauren Falcon of Seamless Travel, an affiliate of Departure Lounge. When career pivoting, how do you bring people you know from your old career, in this case, healthcare, into the fold of your new travel career? How can I present myself as an expert in this new field as well? So, Emma, I'm going to throw this to you first. What advice do you have for Lauren?
Yeah. So assuming you mean kind of when you're leaving healthcare and jumping into this new travel profession, how do you explain that to your ex-fellow healthcare coworkers? I was actually in a similar situation. I left a marketing job to start my own travel agency, and I wasn't super overly confident about the jump I was making. So I actually didn't tell anyone from the marketing agency. I think I told them that I was going to be an assistant for someone who worked in travel, and I left it at that. When in reality, I was building a brand, starting a company, you know, selling travel, embarking on this new adventure. And I think looking back on that, I didn't leave that job well. Now, of course, with Instagram and social media and connections, A lot of those people from that agency are some of our best clients. And I always wonder if I had explained what I was doing better and really sold myself, that they could have become clients a bit sooner. So I think it's easy to have imposter syndrome in those early days. And even now, being 5 years into it, I still have imposter syndrome. But I think when you're leaving your current profession to do something different, you have to explain the why behind what you're doing. Why are you becoming a travel advisor? And why should someone book travel with you? You don't have to explain where you're being trained, how you're being trained, what that looks like. It's more about why you're doing what you're doing and how that could make an impact for someone who wants to use your services. And those can turn into those quick selling points right away. You don't necessarily have to have all the details ironed out.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Every time I, you know, start a new project at work or in my personal life, like, it always comes back to like the why, finding your why. And I think that that's a really important question to ask yourself about things like that. But let me ask Emma, from a practical perspective, if you could go back and do it over again, how would you have let, you know, your former coworkers, your work acquaintances, how would you have let them know? Would it be one-on-one conversations, a Facebook post, all of the above?
I think what I would have done differently is I worked in a kind of a tight-knit bubble and we were friends. And I think I would have just explained exactly what I was doing. I was just too scared to do so. And, you know, I did it. I explained it so well on social media. I explained it on phone calls, but for some reason I felt bad for leaving and that I couldn't transcribe what I was doing next very well. What I actually did to start my business and get those first clients is I made a list of every single email and mailing address that I knew. Parents, friends of friends, asked random people for addresses, you know, put a link to Postable on Facebook asking for email addresses. And I sent a very long letter to all of those people saying, here's what I'm doing next, and here's why I think you should work with me. I had all those email addresses from my corporate job. I should have just included those, but I was very nervous. So I wish that I had just explained myself better, because I think that doing so would have led to more clients probably right off the bat from that old job.
I get that, though. I think a lot of us suffer from imposter syndrome. Like, it's almost like you're afraid to fail, so you're not even going to try, and you're not going to subscribe to the fake it till you make it because you're afraid that you're going to look foolish if you don't. But when you are building a brand and it's a personal brand and you're building a business, you have to be confident in that. And I think there's no harm in saying, like, I'm doing this, I'm really passionate, and highlighting that passion. Like you said, Emma, that's what people are going to remember and be inspired by, not what certifications are you taking or what are you learning or how are you going to do this logistically? Like, they don't need to know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lindsay, how do you talk to your advisors about this topic and like overcoming that? I'm curious how you talk to them.
Everything you just heard Emma say is a reflection of how we talk openly at JetSet and amongst our team members and our affiliates. Honestly, I'm just sitting back like teary-eyed because she explained that so beautifully. And I think, Emma, you could have answered that question of like, here's what I've done differently without going one level deeper, which is what you just did. And the human part of this, of saying like, that's because of imposter syndrome. And like, yeah, Jamie, to your question, like, that's how we try to talk when we are talking to our advisors is let's take this back one level deeper and understand like psychologically why you're afraid to get up in front of these people or why you're afraid to send that email telling them what you're doing. And I think that has really made a huge difference in our team and honestly in the communication that our team has with one another, because now they're willing to be vulnerable with each other and to say, oh yeah, I remember that feeling too. And also to note that feeling does not go away. That's not just because you're a new advisor. I mean, I had the same feelings around acquiring another company. Like, I will not forget when Dr. Bob was like, all right, your next step is to write a letter of intent. And so I like pulled up a Word document and I was like, I intend to buy your business. And Jeremy was like, I don't think that's it. Like, you think this is like a legal document? But like everything you're doing, you know, you're doing it for the first time. And so it's fun to call that out and to be honest and open with each other that like, we're all figuring this stuff out together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all figuring out our why in many ways.
Yeah. And when you do know it, share it. People want to know. Like, I love that part of what Emma just said is like, going back and sharing what the impact of this is going to be with those potential clients and connections. Because like, I mean, I see it in her because she's so passionate about what she does, but that's contagious. And so like when you're brave enough to stand up and say, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, other people pay attention to that and it inspires them.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Awesome. Okay. So we have another question. This is from an advisor named Heather at Gifted Travel Network. So let us hear from Heather.
This is Heather Witte from WeLux Travel. Why are there such vast differences in cost for similar services and excursions in the same destination? How do we explain this to our clients?
So Emma, you obviously deal with clients on a day-to-day basis. What are your thoughts here?
Love a good pricing question from clients. So excursions vary so much based on service. And really it boils down to quality and popularity. And so for example, the most popular catamaran cruise with the best service, the best food and drinks, is going to be higher priced than a very, very similar catamaran cruise with maybe a boat that hasn't been serviced in a while, average food. They're going to look very, very similar online. They're going to vary, you know, 50 euros per person, but one is much better than the other. And I think it can be really hard to explain to clients, but the way that I like to say that is that we are vetting these guides. We're vetting the boats. We're vetting the cars. They've traveled with our clients in the past, so we know which guides have complaints, which tours have complaints, or even which guides have, you know, 5-star reviews, which guides can bring more art to life, which ones can bring more history to life. And explaining all of those things to clients and how the guides and excursions that we are working with are going to be a lot better quality compared to what you're finding on Google. Now, if you are booking, you know, let's say an ATV tour in Jamaica, and that is 10% higher because you're marking commission in there, that's a much tougher thing to explain to a client in terms of marking things up. But there are now sites and ways to kind of get that commission on the back end that I think can save you a conversation with clients.
Emma, do you get these questions a lot from clients, or do you try to get ahead of it by in the initial consult addressing this? Or like, I'm curious from your perspective, like, do you have a lot of clients who are asking you about this, and do you, how do you kind of explain it in a nutshell? What stage in the client relationship do you explain that?
Yeah, I think after that initial proposal, I have a lot of clients that will come back and say, hey, I'm just trying to match the costs compared to what's online, and I'm just finding things are different. So I do try to get ahead of that in initial email. I always say, you know, these excursions are handpicked, they're bespoke, 100% customized to you. They are not what you're going to find online. And, you know, we use the best guides. We have on the ground contacts. And that's, if you are comparing pricing, that is why you'll see it be higher. We always talk about in meetings and such, the concept of a spreadsheet client. And I think that you can kind of see that upfront in an initial stage. Sometimes they surprise you. But when you kind of foresee that someone might be a little more price sensitive, I think it's always helpful to just go ahead and lay out, you know, pricing this compared to what's online is not going to be apples to apples. And let's talk about those differences.
Jen Lee taught this workshop at the Future Leaders in Travel retreat last year about personality selling, and how when you said spreadsheet client, it reminded me of this because she categorizes these people in terms of 4 different animals. And I think this was actually like a real estate situation that she's borrowing this idea from. But owls are these people who are spreadsheet clients. They're the ones who need all the details, and they're like going to compare pricing. And once you kind of figure out the type of client you have, whether that's an owl, there's also like a lamb and a tiger and a bull, you can kind of figure out what stage you need to say that and say, hey, by the way, before you go and compare all of these things, because I know that you're a really detail-oriented person, here I've laid out this thing before you that shows exactly the cost breakdown, what you're getting for it. And I think kind of gauging their personality is another way to kind of figure out what details you need to give and when. We can link to it in the show notes too, like what kind of methodology this is, because it's definitely something that came from real estate, but I've heard great feedback, and Jen Lee is perfect at presenting that if you know her. So
I feel like you just hit the nail on the head with like what I wish I would have known to say to those clients for so many years, just by knowing their personality type. That was a very fascinating tip.
And we're not going to spend too much time on this, but there are these four types, and you can kind of gather within the first 5 minutes of a conversation, which one they fall into pretty easily. And then there's like all these strategies. Like if you're a bull, for example, you're kind of coming and you want the biggest, like showiest thing. And you kind of can gather that from their personality within those first 5 minutes. And you kind of say something like, okay, and which Amex card will you be paying with? Because you don't want to insult them. You don't want to say Visa or MasterCard. So like Jen was saying, like what Amex card should we be putting on this booking? Or, you know, I know that you want like this villa is not going to be good enough for you. So I'm not even going to show you that. I'm going to show you this one because this is like the highest quality premium category. Anyway, enough about that. We'll link to it in the show notes.
That's so cool. But,
yeah. Okay. Okay. We're going to move on. We're going to move on. So the next two questions came from our friends at Gifted Travel Network. And these are just frequently asked questions among their advisors. So the first question is, there are so many travel opportunities offered to travel advisors right now. How do I decide what to spend my time and money on? Lindsay, I'm going to throw this one to you first, and then we can go to Emma.
All right. So how do you decide what to spend your time and money on? I think that it's so wise to step back when you are determining like where you're investing both of those things, right? Those are the two most precious commodities we have, our time and our money. And to figure out like big picture, where does this make sense for me and my business and the direction that my business is going? I think it's really easy to get caught up in like the day-to-day when it comes to, ooh, an opportunity, especially if you're like me, you have like the shiny object syndrome, you know, where like, oh, a trip to Greece or whatever it is, and you just get excited. But if you are intentional about, I need to go to Greece because I've never been, and I've had more clients request it this year than ever, well, then you're going to show a huge return for your book of business and also a gigantic respect for that supplier who has invited you. I think that's a piece of the puzzle that I think a lot of times it's easy to overlook when you don't realize just how much that supplier is doing to invest in you to bring you on that type of experience. So knowing that you can even at least do everything in your power to provide them with a return is being a really good partner and a good travel citizen in that scenario.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, one of the most common things I hear from advisors is like the best way to sell something is to have experienced it yourself. So that makes a lot of sense. Emma, what are your thoughts?
I totally agree. I think it comes down to the return. And I think it's important to remember when evaluating opportunities, whether they're training opportunities, fam trips, et cetera, knowing that there's more to a good travel advisor than just being well-traveled. There's being well-traveled is great. And it, of course, that personal experience helps. But taking kind of your funds for the year and saying, okay, where do I really need to spend these? Is it going to Greece because we're selling that so much this month and I don't know what Santorini actually looks like? You know, spend your money trying to get on a fam to go to Greece. There's an incredible amount of opportunities. And I personally have found that when I visit a destination that I know I could probably provide a return on, even if I'm not 100% confident, maybe we've sold it two or three times, but I still feel uneasy. Once I go, I always get bookings. Now I know that if I were to go to the Maldives, I'm sure it would be phenomenal. But we don't sell a ton of Maldives because it's a pain to get to from Atlanta and from the places on the East Coast where our clients are based. And so I know that right now in my career, spending a couple of $1,000s to go on a fam there is probably not going to provide an immediate return for me or for the supplier. So I think it's all about weighing, you know, exactly what your client base is looking for and going to seek out those places in order to provide that personalized experience to add to their itinerary.
That makes a lot of sense, definitely. So now, okay, we have a question about DMCs, and I just want to give this with a caveat that we solicited these questions last summer. So this is kind of a question of that time, but I have a feeling it's a situation that advisors are going to continue to face going forward, at least in the near term. So some advisors from Gifted Travel Network were wondering, our favorite DMCs are so backed up this year, they can't turn around quotes like they could prior to the pandemic. how can I help my clients understand that their trip that is more than a year out is going to be low on the list to respond when people are traveling? So, you know, again, I think this is a situation that like this was very common this past summer, but I do think that this is relevant going forward. So I'm curious what kind of advice you have about managing client expectations and how to talk to them about this, that like, you know, you're really not top of the priority list at this moment. Emma, how do you deal with that?
Well, I think one of the best parts about being a travel advisor, it's much easier said than done, is being able to set boundaries. When I first started, I would turn around a proposal in 3 business days because I had all the time in the world. I was single. It didn't matter. I would just work through the night. But now, you know, working with suppliers, they're so backed up. And I think that that will continue as long as this level of demand continues. So I think you're right. This question is still relevant. We're still seeing it. But with those boundaries, I think that you have to tell the clients exactly when they can expect a proposal. So if that's 3 weeks from now, because their trip is next December, just be upfront with them that, hey, we're working on a lot of trips. The booking window is shorter. We're working on a lot for March right now. We're working on a lot for April. Because that booking window is shorter, we're going to try and get to this within the next 3 weeks. And I can promise you, you'll have a proposal, you know, in 21 business days or whatever it is. Again, going back to that concept of clear as kind, setting that expectation of on this day, you can expect a proposal. And I've found that clients push back on that very much. They just say, okay, that's great. You know, as long as you don't think we're missing out on flight pricing, hotel pricing, et cetera, then we're cool with whatever timeline you want to set. I think they lean on your expertise and recommendations probably more than you know. So setting those boundaries and being just absolutely clear on those expectations, I think really eliminates any weird communication issues.
We've talked a lot about boundary setting on this show, and we have another episode we can also link to that has a lot of tips on how to do that effectively. And one that came to mind, I remember we spoke about in that episode, was just using your out of office email or in your signature, just right away, kind of set that expectation of, you know, if you're traveling right now, I will get back to you within 48 hours. Well, probably tighter in than that, but I'll get back to you within this amount of hours. Or, you know, if you're traveling 6 to 9 months out, or if you're just initially contacting me, like, here's when you can expect a response, so that they're not wondering. They're not left wondering. They're going to get that answer right away. And Lindsay, I don't know, did you have any other tips or advice when it comes to setting those expectations or setting those boundaries?
Yeah, good question. Well, and I think it's interesting, the tip that you just gave, Emma. I think you and the major traveler team do that, don't you? Oftentimes have the automatic out of office that just sets the, because you have such demand to manage. And they, she's like queen of setting boundaries. So I would say what's one thing we talk a lot at JetSet about when it comes to solving a client dilemma and trying to figure out like how to best approach it, is this formula that I learned. I think it was Donald Miller, who I love following his stuff, that he actually originally said, is that if you can tackle any problem with empathy and authority, you're always keeping those two things in mind, like clients will, like, they'll get it and they'll understand because you're approaching them with empathy. So you're being human and you're saying, I totally understand you're so excited about your trip in 3 weeks. I get it. I would be so excited too, like relating to them. And then coming in with the authority piece of, but here's the reality of the travel industry. And this I know because I work in it day in and day out, and you can trust me here. And I'm giving you the God's honest truth, because I don't want to tell you that you'll have a proposal in 3 days and then disappoint you. And I mean, we use that formula of empathy and authority, even if it's a hurricane is coming to a destination, how do we handle the client that's panicking, or you've got nothing but time because they're planning 18 months out? You know, it oftentimes we feel in the travel industry like our hair is on fire and everything is an emergency, when very few things actually are. The emergency is really just us figuring out the best way to communicate with our clients.
Mm-hmm. That's a great combination. And I love that we're talking about setting boundaries again. We're big fans of boundaries on Trade Secrets. So as frequent listeners know.
We are. Okay. We have another question. This one comes from Tilly James and of Tilly James Travel. And let's hear from her.
Hi, this is Tilly James with Tilly James Travel. My question to you today is, what are some effective ways to identify and convert ocean cruisers to river cruisers?
So we're kind of switching gears here. Now we're talking about travel types and cruising and river cruising. So Emma, I would love to hear from you on this one.
This is such an interesting question because I think the two are so different. And a couple of years ago, I probably would have said, oh, you know, you enjoyed Seabourn going to the Mediterranean, try Alma Waterways. But now being more, after learning a lot more about cruises, we did Jet Set, how's that, training university. It's called Jet Set U. And we bring on suppliers. And last year was kind of focused on, there was 1 month focused on cruising, 1 month focused on Africa, et cetera. And we did a deep dive into all types of cruising. And that's when I really learned just how different the types of cruising clients are. So I think if you're seeing your ocean cruise clients are really, they haven't maxed out on ocean cruising, but they love a small ship. They love a more intimate experience. I would try suggesting a river cruise. Now I have cruise clients who they just want to stay on the ship. They love to see things from the boat and that's it. They're probably going to be ocean clients for life. But I think for those clients who you've given them a taste of what cruising is like, let's find a similar program, but let's bring it down to a smaller, more boutique and intimate level to where you can really get to see these super cool areas that you can't on an ocean ship. So it's a very specific client that I think you can convert from ocean to river and vice versa.
Interesting. Interesting. Hey, Lindsay, do you have any tips on that you'd like to share?
I think Emma just nailed it because I'm sitting here thinking from a psychological perspective, it's almost easier to convert an FIT client to a cruise, to an ocean cruise, than it is mm-hmm. an ocean cruise to a river cruise. I mean, like it's finding that through line and what do they enjoy and how will their lives be better because they're now trying this new experience versus the one that they know and love.
We have one more question, and this comes from Kristen Carr from Ever East Travel in Orlando, an affiliate of Departure Lounge. So let's hear from her.
My name is Kristen Carr. I'm a co-owner of Ever East Travel, an affiliate of Departure Lounge. I would love a discussion on when and if you should grow a team, and if you do so, how. Myself and my business partner, Lene, started Ever East Travel together, and I love having a teammate in all of this. But I'm curious if and when we should hire more advisors. I know travel advisors who work solo, and I can think of agencies that have 5 to 10 travel advisors working for them.
Lindsay, let's start with you, and then we'll hop over to Emma.
I love this question so much. It's one of the things I'm most passionate about in this business, because I think that teams are the way of the travel advisor's future. And what's beautiful about it is they all come in different shapes and sizes. So from ambitions of a small team with just assistants that are W-2 employees to ambitions of building out a full-blown IC shop, like whatever that looks like, it still is running at its core as a team. So I'm so passionate about this because I actually started what was then Epperly Travel as a company within a company. So when Emma talked about like how we ran at the same sphere years ago, we were both at the same host agency. I will say they did a beautiful job in allowing me just full autonomy to create what I was dreaming of, because they were like, you do your thing. We won't bother you. You don't bother us. I noticed when I was doing that a number of times that I just felt like I was completely on an island. And so I'm building this team, which at the time was a very new concept in the industry. I think it's very much caught on. And I wish I had a peer group that I could talk to, other people who had the same goals that were running with the same struggles. And I also wish that I had leadership that could tell me, hey, this is what you would do next as you're looking at this as a business. Now, granted, it's understandable why a host agency's leadership might not mentor you in that situation because they're essentially training their competition. But I thought there could be space within this industry for a host agency that could facilitate the building of teams and help people understand when they're at that point, when it is wise to move forward and when it's not. Because much like she asked in that question, like, how do you know when? Sometimes the timing's not right. And sometimes the timing was 6 months ago. And so it's a matter of kind of identifying those certain mile markers and then going about it the right way to where you are not, your client base is not suffering because you're now building a team and you're having to build, ramp up the training and all that. So I say all of that to say I'm so passionate about it. And that's actually why Jet Set's host agency model is unique, because we built it to support teams. And so Emma is one of those when it comes to her running and owning Major Traveler. She'll come to the table every month with other team leaders within the company and talk about, hey, have this issue. It's an employment issue. It's not something that I'm learning about in any of the trade conversations because they're talking about travel specific. And we'll brainstorm together about the challenges that are necessary for those teams. So all of that to say, so much of this is based on who you are as an individual and what you actually want to achieve out of your business. So there are those who say, like, I have no desire to manage or mentor people. I want to remain a solopreneur, but I do need help. And so that might look like hiring an assistant or even a virtual assistant. And then there are those who say, I really light up at passing along what I've learned, or I have this vision for something different that I want to build. And I know I need other people to help me build it, which was how I felt. And that's when you would build out a team that is helping you all run toward that same goal. But you really have to love it. Like, you really have to want that leadership role. Mm-hmm. That's a long-winded answer, but I love it so much.
No, that was a great answer. That really was. And Emma, you know, I'm curious for your thoughts on this. You said you have 7 advisors on your team now?
I have 7 advisors on my team now. Yeah. And I think Lindsay's totally right about, you know, again, it boils down to the why do you want to build a team? And there's a lot of podcasts and industry speak around teams. And I feel like digging into everyone else's stories is really helpful when it comes to should I or shouldn't I? But for me, it really came down to what is my vision in 3, 5, and 10 years? And then what about the logistics? I think those are the two main things to consider when you're thinking about building out a team. In terms of vision, you know, do you want to mentor and manage? Because that is what you'll be doing with a team. And I think it can be really easy to see. I mean, now teams are kind of trending. A lot of people are thinking about doing it in the industry. It's a great way to expand your agency. I knew that in 10 years, I don't know that I want to be fully selling travel all day, every day. I don't know if I'll be burnt out from that or if I'll still love talking to clients every day. And so I wanted to build out a team that would potentially allow me to pull back slightly in 10 years, very far down the road. And I think you have to realize that you are bringing on people that you have to take care of. You are giving people a new career. They are quitting their jobs to come be a part of what you're doing. And you have to take care and nurture that and train them well. So it's not totally a self-serving thing. You have to really think about the people that you're bringing on. And then the logistics piece is huge. It's something that I probably didn't consider fully when I brought on a team. Someone asked me recently about the time commitment, and I thought, I don't even know how to add up the hours. I mean, you're building out 7 commission statements every month. I had to bring on a full-time accountant, not only to do my invoicing, but to really help me with the math, with the bank statements and everything. It just goes wild. So the logistics piece of it is huge. And then also, you know, that's 7 hours a month, and at first a week that I was meeting with my team one-on-one. And that takes up a lot if I'm working a normal 40-hour work week. So just evaluating the logistics behind bringing on a team alongside your vision, it's a really hefty decision. And I think it's one that shouldn't be taken lightly, and you should definitely seek out people who've done it before to kind of weigh whether it's a good idea or not.
That's great advice. And I think a perfect way to wrap up our episode today. So Lindsay, Emma, thank you so much for joining us. Where can our listeners find you? Lindsay, let's start with you first.
Yeah. Everyone is welcome to, of course, follow Jet Set as a whole. That is the best way to learn more about what we're doing as a company. Always feel free to reach out to me. My email is lindsay@jetsetworldtravel.com. I'm always happy to chat further. As you can see, I think from this conversation, we're both very passionate about this industry and the future of it. So I always love these types of talks.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And Emma, how can our listeners connect with you?
Yeah, our website is majortraveler.com, and you can always feel free to email me, emma@majortraveler.com too. And then, of course, Instagram. I love our little social corner of the world and would love to interact on there too.
Great, great. So thanks for everyone for listening in. And for those of you who submitted questions, please review, rate, and subscribe to Trade Secrets. You can find us wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And if you've got a question, we'd love to answer it. Call our trade secrets hotline at 201-902-2098 and leave us a voicemail with your question. You can also email us at tradesecrets@travelweekly.com.
Our theme song is Sock Hop by Kevin MacLeod. And again, if you'd like to get in touch, we'd love to hear from you. And Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Check out Travel Weekly's flagship podcast, The Follow by Travel Weekly. A follow, spelled F-O-L-O, is a journalism term that means to follow a breaking news story with more details and analysis. And on The Follow podcast, our reporters and experts will take a deep dive into the biggest stories and trends of the week. Subscribe to get the weekly follow or go to travelweekly.com/podcasts.